You are listening to the Loikamania Pop Culture Podcast. Is brought to you by CheapGraphicNovels.com, where you can purchase your favorite trade paperbacks and hardcovers for up to 45% off cover price.
How's it going, everyone? Pat Loika here, and you're listening to another episode of Loikamania. Before we get right into the show, I just want to say thank you to our sponsors over at CheapGraphicNovels.com, where you can get a lot of books for 45% off, including books by that have been worked on by our special guest this week. If you've been reading comics, which I'm sure you do since you listen to this show, a very integral part of the comics are the letterers. And it's a thankless job, in my opinion, because lettering is the best letterers are the type of people who, basically you don't notice anything about their work, because when they do something, when they do mess up and they screw up and it looks bad, it's noticeable. And it's kind of sad to say that, the best letterers are the ones you don't notice, because, well, without the letterers, it's not really a comic book. You can't read it. At any rate, our guest today is Mr. Clayton Cowles, who works for Virtual Calligraphy, and he does a lot of books with Marvel, and he letters a lot of books that I absolutely love, like Uncanny X-Force. Welcome to the show, Clayton.
Oh, thank you. Although Uncanny X-Force is a Corey Pettit book.
Oh,
sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought I saw that on one of your credits, but oh, well, I apologize.
Well, I did a fill-in issue of that a while back, but
that might have been it, because I think because I remember reviewing an issue of the book and you were in the credits. So
yeah.
My apologies for that. You do
letter
also Ultimates and FF. And both books that I absolutely love. And, of course, Journey into Mystery by one of the most enjoyable books. And I bet you guys are having fun on that book, because the characters in that book are just ridiculously fun, particularly.
Yeah, we really are. Lucky.
And, welcome to the show. And I've been looking forward to this chat, because, except we don't really hear much from your perspective, from a letterer's perspective in comics. Because, everyone wants to talk to the writer, or everyone wants to talk to the artist. And I kind of wanted to make it a point to get as many other people who practice the other disciplines behind the making of comics. Like I've had colorists on, and now letterers, and your stuff I thought was really strong. I mean, Ultimates in particular was one of the things that really got me into checking out more of your work, because Ultimates has a very different lettering style from the other books. You use mixed case fonts, and it stands out, and it's kind of reminiscent, of course, of the earlier Ultimate books. And I always wondered, was that a choice you guys made, or was that something that it's handed upon you by editorial?
That was a collaborative effort. Mm-hmm. When Ultimates was starting out, like me, Sana Eminette and Mark Panichia, the two editors of Ultimates, we spent a good while figuring out the lettering style of that book before we went ahead and did the whole thing. I think we tried out four different fonts on that book before we settled on the one we ended up using, and all but one of those were with lowercase characters. They wanted that specifically, but yeah, for the reason you stated, I think to get back in touch with the roots of the Ultimate books and stuff. They do it on all the other Ultimate books as well, but I think I think all those ones have different lowercase fonts, but this one is uniquely to Ultimates. I think this is the only book we're using it on right now.
Oh yeah, wow.
Yeah,
so that really makes it stand out, and of course it works really well with Assad Rebic and Dean White's art too. So I think it's a very nice combination. Before we kind of get way too far into it, well, I have to start with my obligatory first question, and that's, what got you into comics?
What got me into comics? I liked them, so I kept buying them. Mm-hmm. Comics and art in general they've always sort of been a part of my life. When I was growing up, both of my parents were artists, so I was just sort of naturally drawn to the comics medium. Mm-hmm. Story and art combined into one beautiful ball of fun, and I sort of stuck with it throughout my life. When I was a kid, I really liked the Tintin books, and from there I got into Peanuts and Calvin from Hobbes, and I also watched like the X-Men and Batman cartoons when I was a kid, and got into the comics of those later on as I got older. And yeah, once I got into my teens, I really got into comic books, decided I wanted to do it for a living, and it just became my life.
Oh, wow. Excellent. And of course, now I'm going to ask you the question, like, what led you into doing lettering?
Well, I went to the Joe Kubert School of Cartoon and Graphic Art for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And, when the end of my third and final year was in sight, I sat down and looked at my art and just decided, you know what? I don't think I'm ready to be a full-time penciler or inker or whatever. And, while I was in school, I took a lettering class during my first year, and I took a lettering course during my second year. Like, first year was all hand lettering. Second year was what had more of a focus on digital. And both my teachers said I was really good at it, that I was just a natural letterer. And so I took that to mine and decided to pursue it as a regular old career, try to break into comics through that and hopefully branch out from there.
Okay. Yeah, that's certainly a reasonable, you know, that's a good way to start, at least getting your foot in the door. Of course, you've been at it since 2009, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I think you started with Cowboy Ninja Viking from Image.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And how did you, I mean, the breaking in process is, I imagine it's different because, you know, it's, again, a different discipline. Like, how, you know, I mean, aside from, of course, getting in touch with people and showing yourself off at conventions, like, what, you know, when it comes to lettering, how is it different from, say, someone who is presenting their stuff as, you know, like, say, they want to be a penciler or an inker?
Well, it's weird. Uh-huh. I feel like I got really lucky in terms of how I was able to break in, because it was like you said, it was just basically through knowing people. And I got into lettering. Like, I told one of my instructors at school, the awesome, fantastic Gabe Bridwell, that I was interested in pursuing lettering because he knew a few letterers and stuff. And he said, okay, if any jobs come my way or offers or contacts or whatever, I'll let you know. And I actually got in touch with AJ Lieberman, the writer of Cowboy Ninja Viking, mm-hmm. through Gabe, because he contacted Gabe saying, hey, I need some letters for some pitches. Gabe pointed him to me. I responded, and it sort of grew from there. And that's also how I got my job through Chris Eliopoulos. It was also through Gabe. And I got an internship with him. So I can't really say I'm not sure how much, like, really good advice I can give about breaking in as a letterer, because I think I just got lucky, and I guess I just had a talent or aptitude for it, and it just shot off from there or whatever.
Yeah. Well, lettering is, you know, there's a lot more to lettering than what people tend to think, because people think you just, you know, some people, you know, at least people who are not at least educated in the process are you know, they think you just slap a word balloon where you can fit it and then you just type it in there. What, mm-hmm. I mean, what is your typical process with a page after you receive a script?
Well, I receive the script, I convert all the type and sort of skim through the script, see what I'm in for, like see where the story is going. And once I get the page, I lay down all the text individually and then just make each balloon one by one and try to make it fit and conform with the rest of the page and how it's laid out and the composition and stuff. And my computer just fell asleep. And, I just look at it and match the composition, analyze the page, and try to letter it how I think would be appropriate. Okay. I start by just placing down, I just start by placing down balloons. Like, I try to match the speaking order as best I can and try to match the flow of the page. You follow the same basic rules of storytelling and composition and lettering as you would with penciling or coloring, like in terms of how you try to guide the eye throughout the page from the top left-hand corner in sort of a zigzag motion to the bottom right hand. It's like, it's the basic Will Eisner storytelling rule, and it also applies to lettering.
Okay, and, I can definitely see that, okay.
Yeah, and also, like, I'll usually throw in the sound effects first and try to, like, work the balloons around that, because the sound effects are more incorporated with the art. They're a bigger part of it. Try to make those fit and make sure they're appropriate to the scene, like, pick out the right font and make it just loud enough that it reads correctly and also keep it legible, you know?
Yeah, I imagine it could be really difficult when you're when you work with writers who are really good, you know, who are big on the conversational stuff. So with that in mind, like, you know, depending on who you work with, is there any kind of collaboration, you know, or any kind of communication between you or say the penciler or you and the writer before you actually start on a page? Because I can kind of see, you know, how it can be a challenge. Like, say, a writer like Bendis, who has a lot of, you know, everyone has, like, some kind of speech pattern, and you know, they do a lot of exchanges, a lot of, you know, quips. Like, with writers like that, like, is it something that, do you communicate with them first, or do you and the artist talk things out, like, say, you know, just in designing a page, or do you just basically receive pages from them and you just try to deal with it from there?
Well, it varies a lot. When I was working on Cowboy Ninja Viking, when I would get the script and the artwork, A.G. Lieberman would usually call me on the phone and we'd talk for a good long while about what we're going to do here. But on Marvel books, especially, I very rarely communicate with the talent, and they very rarely communicate with me. I do most of my talking just through the editors, although that's been changing recently on a Journey into Mystery in particular, and especially on Defenders. Like, Matt Fraction writes a lot of notes for me specifically about what he wants here specifically on this Defenders page, which character logo he wants, like what he was thinking for this caption, what he wants on this crossword puzzle. And I really trust Matt when it comes to that sort of thing, because I know he has, like, an artistic background and stuff. And I think it's coming about more with Kieran Gillen, because we've been doing the book for so long. Mm-hmm. And I guess we've just become, the whole team has just become more comfortable with each other. Me, him, Lawrence Sankovic, and John Denning and stuff.
Very cool. And, When you're making particular choices with with the fonts, like you mentioned earlier, you know, we kind of touched upon it when we talked about Ultimates for a bit. Like, do you whenever you get a new gig, are you kind of given the freedom to, you know, play around with, like, you know, they say the lettering style on the book that you're on, or is that something that just, you know, you just say, oh, just, you know, they've been doing it like this, so you just need to continue the way they've been doing it? Because I imagine, like, you know, if you know, as a letterer, you know, I think it can get kind of boring to just, you know, just be given something to do and you just follow what you're told. You know, I was kind of thinking that maybe you guys may have some leeway as to what you can actually do with, you know, the lettering style of a book.
Yeah, that also varies. With a long ongoing title like Fantastic Four FF, mm-hmm. I'm just pretty much following what Russ Wooten had done before me. Mm-hmm. He was the guy doing that before me. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, when I get a new project, the first thing I'll do is contact Chris Eliopoulos, mm-hmm. the head of virtual calligraphy and stuff, and say, hey, is there anything you have in mind for this book that you want me to do? And about 75% of the time, he'll say, use this font with this header. This is what I want. But sometimes, nowadays, more often than not, he'll just say, nah, I don't really care. Go nuts. and then I get to just do whatever I want. And I'll still send it to him for approval and say, hey, do you think this looks good? And he'll say, yeah, I don't care. Leave me alone. Just send it in.
And
it's good to be free.
Well, kind of on the subject of Chris Eliopoulos, of course, you work with virtual calligraphy. Now, I was always curious, you know, since there are many letters that are under that umbrella, do you guys like work in the studio, or do you guys just work at home, or you know, or is it a solitary thing for you guys, or do you have the studio environment kind of going for you?
We have like a virtual studio environment, kind of. We all work in our respective homes. Like most of the VC guys live in the New York, New Jersey area, where I too used to live, mm-hmm. and but we're usually in communication with each other. Usually over AIM, like in various periods throughout the week, like Eliopoulos and I are IMing each other usually at least once a day. I think he and Joe Caramagna just talk all the time about nothing. but yeah, it's a lot like a studio, but except we're all alone, trapped in prisons of our own making.
I'm
but there is like a brotherhood and a camaraderie there between. Like the five of us, we're all good friends and stuff. We all like each other, and we all complain about the same crap. It's great.
well, you know, lettering, like I said, I think it's a very underappreciated art. And I was also curious. I mean, I kind of made a statement earlier that you know the best letterers are the ones that you really do not notice. What is your thought on that particular line of thinking? You know, because I imagine that it's kind. You guys might take it, you know. I know I have a couple of friends who actually have been dabbling with lettering, and they kind of, you know, when I said that, they kind of took it in the wrong way. I was always curious to see, you know, what an actual professional thinks of that.
Well, I agree with that sentiment 100%. I'm like, yeah, our job is to enhance and not to distract. Mm-hmm. We're there to make everyone else look good, and I have no problem with that. Like that was my mindset when I got into the job. It's the mindset I maintain to today. And someone had a really good analogy about that. I think it was Dustin Harbin, the guy on Casanova, where I think he's the one who said that letterers are like the bass players of every comic book. Like they're good if they're there, but you're not really supposed to notice them. But if they suck, you really hear it. And I think that's absolutely true.
Yeah, and the thing is, a lot of people tend to take lettering for granted. Like, I picked up an indie comic book not that long, about a year or so ago, and there's you're reading through it, and there's a point where you notice that there's a difference in lettering style, and it really takes you out of the book.
Yeah.
And whereas you read any book that any of you guys work on, you know, it's fluid, you know, the storytelling, and like you mentioned, you know, especially now that you kind of elaborated on it, now you can actually see, you know, like the storytelling flowing from, you know, left to right, up to down. And again, it really increases my appreciation for what you guys do. Now,
thank you.
While you were learning, this particular discipline, like, was there anything? Did you have any preconceived notions about this particular, you know, about this particular gig?
Well, ashamed as I am to admit it, I totally got into lettering, thinking this is like the easiest thing to do in the industry. This will be a cakewalk. Mm-hmm. And I was totally just treating like the art of lettering like an afterthought when I first got into it. But once you do it for a little while and really study the greats and try to deconstruct like what they're doing and why they're doing it, you really develop an appreciation for it.
Yeah, and
did I stray from the original question?
No, you're good. I have attempted to letter before, and I know that there is a lot more to it than what, you know, what I thought, because when I tried to do it, just constructing word balloons and that sort of thing, it was a real pain. And
sure.
Of course, obviously everyone letters, like most people letter by computer these days. I was always curious, you know, what type of software do you use, and what would you recommend for people who are like looking into getting into this, and what you think they should learn before they do it? Because, you know, I mean, just as a prerequisite, I would think that people should have some kind of should learn a little bit about, you know, graphic design or at least page layout, so that they could, you know, at least, you know, kind of play around with it.
Agreed, 100%. I use Adobe Illustrator, and that's what most other people should use as well, or some other vector based software, but Illustrator's the best there is. Mm-hmm. So you might as well go with that. And before you get into it, yeah, like you said, like know something about art or page flow or composition or design before you dive into this particular aspect of it. But from there, it's really tricky because lettering is, there are so few like big rules you should follow. It's really just a bunch of small rules mashed together in this giant ball. And you really just have to pick them up, like, as you keep doing it. Like you learn by doing, you learn different tricks as you go on. Like, for example, you know how you'll see a balloon, like, butted against, like, the top of a panel sometimes?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's cut off and mashed up there? Like, if you're going to do that, then the primary balloon, if there's another balloon before that, it should be doing that as well. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it disrupts the page flow, you know? And yeah. I see a lot of guys not do that. And it's not like a problem per se, but it's just like a subtlety that I think really helps the way a page reads. And also balloon overlap is another one of those small rules that can really make a difference if you really pay attention to it.
Yeah.
Like, say for instance, you have one balloon of somebody talking, somebody else has another balloon and the second person is interrupting the first one. Like what we in virtual calligraphy usually almost always do is have that second balloon overlap that first one, like go on top of it just a little bit. But if they're just passively talking after that person, then the first balloon overlaps the second. It's really a bunch of small rules like that. You just have to learn it by doing it or just by studying the masters and just really deconstructing them. That's all I can really say.
Now,
do it and look at it.
Exactly. And, you know, with regards to, you know, like as far as lettering goes, whose work inspired you the most? Like, you know, a lot of artists, you talk to them and they talk about, you know, the artists they like. I was always curious, you know, as far as letterers go, like who do you guys consider as, you know, who do you consider at least as you know, the greats or the people that more people should be studying?
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't speak for the other guys in the studio.
Works for yourself. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I'm totally kissing ass here, but Chris Eliopoulos is far and away the best there is at digital lettering and hand lettering as well. He's the best there is. Just look at everything he does, because everything he does has a reason for it, and he's doing it right. He's at the top of his game. He's been at the top of his game for like 20 years now. He's incredible. He knows the medium inside and out. He's the man at it. And he was actually the first letterer whose name I ever learned. And in this bizarre twist of fate, like the first Marvel comic book I ever bought was an Uncanny X-Men. I think it was a Joe Madureira issue. Like the Phalanx is in it, Banshee's hauling ass through the mansion doing shit. The White Queen is there. And like that was, yeah, I forget. I forget the exact number.
It was during the Phalanx Covenant, I think number 316 and 317. Oh my god, I remember.
I think it was 316.
Yeah. that was like the middle of Joe Mad's first run on the book, actually.
Like, yeah, I think that's when he became like the full guy on it.
Yeah.
Something like that. But like I really looked at the credits on that one and it's like, oh, Scott Liddell, Joe Madureira, Steve Bucciolato, Chris Eliopoulos, letterer. And now I'm working for him. That's amazing. And watch, now I go into it and it's like Richard Starkings or something. I just completely ruined it. Oh, I remembered it all wrong. Whatever. I know who he was early on.
And yeah, there are a lot of really, really familiar names that come up. Like, you know, like you mentioned X-Men, you know, like, of course, X-Men is pretty much synonymous with Tom Orzechowski, for example.
He's one of my heroes.
Yeah, he is, you know, and he is great. Todd Klein, of course. And of course Chris Eliopoulos himself. Yeah, he's Chris is also, like, you know, funny enough, like, you know, he has one of the more memorable names, and it was one of those names that the first time you see, you're like, how do you pronounce that? But yeah, he's great. And
you ever hear about the other Chris Eliopoulos?
There's another one.
There's another Chris Eliopoulos, and he is also a cartoonist. It's amazing. He lives in, like, Indiana, I think. Mm-hmm. And they both have, like, really different cartooning styles, but they're still both cartoonists. And, mm-hmm. like, I've heard Chris talk about this before, and he's going, okay, I had this name, Chris Eliopoulos, a name that nobody in their right mind should have. And I'm a cartoonist. And there's another guy named Chris Eliopoulos who's a cartoonist. But there's only one Jeff Smith. What's up with that?
Yeah, that's... Man, that is just such a weird coincidence. You know, I mean, what are the odds, honestly?
Maybe it's just the torment of having that name.
Well, actually...
The world must know I will be a cartoonist.
And actually, that's actually gives me an opportunity to make a segue to something else. Besides the fact that you're a letterer, you yourself are an illustrator, or at least you've been dabbling in it. And mm-hmm. I've checked out your DeviantArt page, and I think you're not bad. I really dig your Omega Red, for example.
There's
other things here that I thought were pretty badass.
Thank you.
Did you have any kind of particular? You went to the Joe Kubert School, of course. But you know, besides that, did you have any particular training? Like, of course, I imagine you wanted at one point to, you know, to draw comics.
Yeah, I still do.
You still do, and I think mm-hmm. you can. You know, I mean, I certainly see, I you know, from your work here that, you know, you certainly have the chops for it. I think, you know, I just haven't seen, like, I like that. I like the there's a new Avengers page that you posted there. I think that's also great. And
colored that.
Oh, you colored that one.
Yeah, that was too. That was actually for a class. I took Chris Sotomayor's coloring class at Comics Experience earlier this year, and that was my final project for the beginner's course.
That is very cool. Coloring, you got to color Stuart Immonen then. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big thrill. He's one of my favorites.
Yeah. He is great, man. He is one of those guys who can pretty much draw or do anything. And he's fantastic, and I wish I was half that good.
Yeah, me too. Stuart Immonen is one of those guys who you hear a lot of people talk about him and how great he is, but you don't really see it at first, mm-hmm. or at least I didn't, because mm-hmm. I started noticing him like when Ultimate X-Men was going on, and he came on after Andy Kubert, and I was like, oh, this is way different. What's going on? But then then when he started doing Next Wave, I really studied it. It's like, okay, what makes this guy great? And eventually I cracked the egg, and now he's just one of my favorites. I adore everything he does. And I haven't been able to – it just hasn't gone down at all. I've just loved him consistently for all that time. That guy is the man, and he's super nice too.
Yeah, I've gotten to meet him once. It was a very brief meeting, and I've actually always wanted to get him on the show, but he's extremely busy with stuff, so I don't blame him. But I'm checking out your stuff. I dig, you know, like I saw you know the Star Trek, you know, 5-page thing you did, and a few other things you've done here. You know,
student work.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, it does show. I mean, you do show the storytelling there, and I've always been curious. I mean, if would it ever get to a point where, you know, would you be, you know, interested in possibly creating your own stuff, you know, instead of making, you know, like working on like a company character?
And, like, well, that's the goal. Mm-hmm. That's the dream. Mm-hmm. Like in time to just be at that point where I'm able to do my own stuff and live off of it.
Yeah, I certainly think you have, you know, you have the skill there. I saw also, you know, you have some X-Men pages that you did that, you know, basically I think it looks like you were reworking off of a Mike Carey script, right?
Yeah. During the Supernovas arc.
Yeah, another good book. Yeah. I think I thought you have a pretty good, you know, storytelling. You have a knack for storytelling. I could at least say that, at least just by looking at it, because I could look at some of these pages and not know what's going on. And I mean, not read the word balloons. I can kind of tell what's going on. So you've got that at least. So
yeah, the lettering's way different on those. Yep. Doesn't look like it does now.
Mm-hmm. How long ago did you do these?
2.5 years.
Okay, like before
the bulk of those.
Yeah, before you got it. Before you actually broke in, and I see, I really like looking at, you know, your looks like your practice pages, or at least, you know, stuff that you've been working on here, because it's just interesting, because a lot of people think that just because you letter, they think that's the only thing you do. It's nice. You're pretty versatile. You do that. You color as well. There's a lot of like cool little pinup stuff here that I dig, like the Ramona flowers thing you have here, and the Rocketeer and Totoro, which is hilarious. But yeah, it's as far as illustration goes, like aside from possibly doing comics, like have you ever thought of doing this commercially at least? Or
well, yeah, sort of. I do it on the side. I have a Hermione Granger piece that I did up there, and I was lucky enough to sell a one of a kind print of that earlier this year at an art show that my family did, and that one that's up there of the two guys cycling at night. I did that for a local show, and I sold some prints of that there. So I have a very small local commercial art career, but it's gradually picking up. I'm still working at it, and I have another thing going on. And most letterers do this, actually.
Yeah, I mean, Chris.
Like Joe Caram. Yeah, Chris has his strips and stuff, and that thing he's doing with Nate Cosby, Cowboy. But Joe Caramagna is also a writer. Mm-hmm. Corey Pettit is also a painter. Joe Savino does a lot of Photoshop work. Like lettering is the breadwinner for us and stuff, but we still have our true passions that we still keep up on the side. I don't think lettering is the be all end all for all of us, but we love doing it, but it's just not the dream.
Oh yeah, because as we kind of talked about, sometimes it can get a bit tedious, you're basically just sitting in, to a certain extent, you're laying out and you guys, I mean, here's something I've always been curious about, actually.
Okay.
A lot of people, sometimes, typos surface in books. And I've always been curious, sometimes writers are, are not paid to spell, they're paid to write. So do you guys, when you're working, do you guys literally type every word, or do you guys just copy paste sometimes off of files, or is that something?
We always copy and paste. It's just safer that way. You're way more likely to avoid a typo if you do that than if you type everything out by hand.
Okay.
And when they do get through, it's a fluke, because usually if one of us spots a typo, we'll fix it, like change te to that or there to there or whatever. And most of the editors are really good at spotting typos as well. So when one does get through, it's bizarre.
Now you mentioned editors, who you work on a good number of books right now for Marvel, and how many editors do you actually work with? Just in relations to that.
Good question. I've never actually counted them all. I've worked with every editor in the office to some degree, but I work the most consistently with I work with Lauren Sankovich and John Denning a lot on the Fantastic Four books. I work with Sebastian Gerner a lot. We do Ghost Rider, but we also do Deadpool Max, and we were doing Wolverine the Best There Is and Deadpool Core and a couple of other side projects. I consistently work with about five or six people, and then just other people on random projects on the side. I'm not sure if I'm anyone's go-to guy per se, but now that I do more monthly books, I get to work with the same people more consistently and stuff. Before, I was doing almost exclusively miniseries at the start of this year. I think my only monthlies were Wolverine the Best There Is and Deadpool Max, and those were both with Sebastian Gerner. But now I guess I become more prolific. I have a more solid team, I want to say. Mm-hmm. That's not right, but
Yeah, you could refer to them that way. I mean, it's all a matter of your perspective.
Yeah, sure.
And that works out
fine. Go team!
And, You've lettered quite a few books, and you letter quite a few books on a consistent basis. Is there any particular book that when you receive a script, you're just excited to start working on it, because maybe you like the writer, or you like the artist that you're working on, do any particular book stand out? And of course, I mean, you can name more than just one if you have to choosing.
Well, I don't want to play favorites, but Journey into Mystery has really escalated into something special, I think.
I agree.
That book has gotten way close to my heart, especially since Fear Itself ended, and I'm not knocking Fear Itself or anything, but now that Journey into Mystery is sort of moving into its own little world, it's starting to go on its own path, it's really getting fun. Issue 632, it's not out yet. It'll be out once this airs, I believe. Mm-hmm. I don't want to reveal too much about it, but if you're listening, go out and get that book because it's magical. It has Midge and Betty Breitweiser on art, and they just knock it out of the park, and it's just a fun story. Like, I was getting the giggles just working on that thing. I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my God, this is so much fun. What a fun book.
That's awesome.
Like, I think it's the best one we've done yet, and Karen seems to agree.
Yeah,
it's the Yule Christmas issue.
So. Okay, I look forward to that.
Yeah, man, pick it up.
I think
it does not disappoint.
Yeah, I love that book so much. I think Kid Loki is probably one of the best characters right now.
Agreed.
And he is just there's just so much more to him. I think turning him into a kid and turning him, you know, doing this to the character is probably the best thing they've ever done to him. It's new territory, and you know, he can be mischievous. You know, he can get into all kinds of mischief, and you know, it's not always going to be, you know, the Loki that we know, that, you know, that you want to hate. This guy, you really want to like this guy. You really want to get into this guy. And,
yeah.
And he has a chance to become something more than what we know he could be, you know.
Yeah, so, I really like the nature versus nurture conflict that goes on in that book. Yeah. I think Loki really wants to be a hero, but he can't be a full hero because that's just who he is. Mm-hmm. That's his status. And I also like the whole theme of like man's relationship with story and fiction and mythology and stuff. That's how Loki won the thing. He used the power of story to win the battle. That was cool. Honestly, I like everything about that book. I like I like not just Kid Loki, but I really like Leah, and I like how Kieran likes Volstagg. I love the issue about Volstagg telling his version of Fear Itself.
yeah, I remember
that was really cool.
Man, I love that book, and I'm glad it's doing well enough. So I look forward to that holiday issue. You know, it's going to be a lot of fun. Like, aside from, of course, actually, for those of us who are listening or not aware, can you actually name the books that you are working on so that people will know where to find you?
Okay. Well, I'm doing Fantastic Four and FF. I'm doing both of them. Uh-huh. Journey into Mystery. I'm doing Defenders with Matt Fraction. Uh-huh. Deadpool Max with David Lapham and Kyle Baker and sometimes Sean Crystal. I'm doing Carnage USA with Zeb Wells and the other Clayton in the industry, Clayton Crane. That's bizarre, seeing like two Claytons next to each other in a credits thing. I never thought that would ever happen. Two Claytons meeting. I've never spoken to him, but
he's a good dude. I've encountered him at a con before. He's a good
I hear
dude.
That. Yeah. Either he's surprisingly nice and pleasant for the kind of stuff that he draws.
Yeah, right? It's funny, like, you know, the personalities. I mean, you look at people's work and you associate with their person and you think that that's what their personality is going to be like, and then you meet them. You know, he's fairly soft-spoken, and then you see his art, like, particularly when he was working on X-Force. You're just like, man.
Oh, yeah.
This stuff is pretty brutal. And then you meet, like, oh, that's him? And there's a lot of guys who are like that, and it's always cool to see the type of personality behind the work.
Mm-hmm.
And
I also do I just want to finish that off. I also do Ghost Rider and Avengers Solo, and I'm right now working on the last issue of Superior with Mark Miller.
Cool. And at this point, we actually have quite a bit of listener questions that I want to get into.
Cool. Whoa.
Whenever I record this, I usually try to solicit questions, but you probably got the most questions I've ever got in within like the amount of time that they had to ask the question.
Really?
So there are some. Yeah. Well, the thing is, we don't really, like I said, we don't hear enough from letterers, you know. And I think that needs to change because there's a lot to learn from you guys. And there's a completely, you know, there's a part of the comics or the creation process in comics that, you know, that's kind of being ignored. And it's kind of integral to what happens in the books. Because, like I said, without lettering, you can't read a comic book. You know, it's not a comic book. It's just a picture book.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so, you know, credit where it's due. I mean, like I said, you guys do such an amazing job. And you guys, I don't think you guys get enough praise for what you do. So that's, you know, kind of why I started, you know, that's like I've always wanted to get, you know, you guys on. So we'll get started here. Dean Stell has asked, which writer is the most challenging to letter?
Well, I guess the obvious answer is Brian Bendis. And it's for pretty much the exact reason that you think. It's because Brian loves dialogue, mm-hmm. and he's a big fan of Aaron Sorkin, and it shows. And it can be a challenge sometimes.
Okay.
Not to say that I don't enjoy it, the rare instances that I get to work with him and stuff, but it can be a challenge, especially when you have characters like playing off each other, but in one small panel. And you have to cram something like 9 word balloons into it, and it's like 1 by 2 inches big or something. You have to get way creative with your tails and leashes to make it read properly.
Yeah, but you know, a good challenge is always fun to overcome. So
it's very refreshing, actually. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of my guys are really easy to letter for, like Jonathan Hickman and Jonathan Hickman. Hickman is way easy to letter. He tells you exactly what he wants, and it's easy to do. And like the guys who he works with are usually such pros that they know exactly where to lay everything out so that it reads correctly.
Very cool.
That guy knows his stuff.
Yeah, of course, his graphic design background obviously plays into, you know, the way he handles his books. Mm-hmm. I really dig that. You know, I think he's doing some next level stuff, particularly with his creator owned work.
Yeah, know? I started reading some of those earlier this year, like because I was working on his stuff on Fantastic Four and Ultimates, and I was like, I'm curious about what else he does. So I picked up Pax Romana and the Nightly News, and they just blew me away. They're really cool.
I love Pax Romana. That is, you know, that is probably one of my favorite things. One of my favorite indie books in the last, you know, last few years.
Me too.
The design and the storytelling and using design for storytelling is just great. And, you know, mm-hmm. you know, everything from typography to, you know, just the illustration.
They're really passionate books, you know?
Yeah.
Like I read the Nightly News and I was like, holy shit, this is angry.
Yeah.
But Pax Romana has some really cool ideas. I love the idea of the Gene Pope. Mm-hmm. Just this Pope made from the genes of all the other awesome popes throughout history. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah, man, I would love a sequel to that book. I mean, you know, I don't know how, but you know, I would be first in line to buy that book if they do. But
have you read his current thing at all?
The Red Wing. Yeah, it's pretty good.
I've read The Red Wing. What's the other one? That's just him.
It hasn't come out yet. You're thinking of Feel Better Now, I think.
Yes, I am. Yeah, I thought it might have been out yet.
Yeah, he's actually expanding it into a full graphic novel instead of like a one shot. So that's come out next year. I'm looking forward to that. And you know, the concept really won me over. You know, a bunch of psychiatrists who decide to basically mess with their patients. just the thought of that, and you know how Jonathan is. He's a very smart writer. I just imagine the stuff
and
he
thinks
up
big.
Yeah, he does.
He thinks way big.
Yeah, the FF stuff, man. I love that book so much. Like the current storyline is just it's just such a great payoff to everything that he's been building up to for the last year and a half or so.
Yeah, I saw your tweet earlier today. Or maybe it was yesterday, where you, where you mentioned that you were happy to see Juan Bobillo on taking over FF.
Yeah.
And that was very comforting because I was worried that there would be like a backlash or something because Juan isn't a bad artist. He's an excellent draftsman, but he's so different from Steve Epting and Barry Kitson and everyone else who's been on the Hickman run up to this point. Thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, the thing that makes it great is that Juan is working on the book right now, and it's kind of starring the kids, and his art style is perfect for that. You know, for those characters. And
yeah.
I like his rendition of Dragon Man. I like his Doom. I like a lot of the characters that he has. I think he's a good fit considering that particular aspect of the overall story.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure you know there are people who are adjusting to it because it's of course it is.
Oh yeah, not everyone's going to love it, but
yeah, and you can say that about anyone's work though. You know,
sure.
Not everyone's going to love it, but I think he's fantastic, and I think I've been a fan of his work since he was doing She-Hulk with Dan Slott.
Mm.
And he's just one of those guys who, anytime he does something, I'm going to buy it because he's a fantastic illustrator, and his storytelling is great. So it's cool that that he's out there doing a really high profile book. So
yeah,
I hope he picks up more fans because of that too.
Me too.
Yeah,
I have a funny story. I have a lettering story about that book. If you want to hear it,
oh, let's do it.
Lettering story. Gather around, children. Well, and yeah, I can talk about the job a little bit. Like, what we in Virtual Calligraphy also do in addition to lettering is, like, we'll also do the recap pages and, like, the next issue pages that you see at, like, either end of the book. And they like to get – and on the Fantastic Four books, they like to get creative with the titles. And at the end of every credits, there's a thing. It's like Modern Masters, Stan Lee, and Jack Kirby, but they have a different title in every issue.
Uh-huh.
So I got the recap text for that issue, but I didn't have a title for it, so I just sat there and decided, like, all right, let's have some fun. What would be a good title about this book as a launching pad of some kind?
Uh-huh.
I know, Too Many Kids. So I made that the title of the book and sent in the recap for approval and said to Denny, like, hey, I've just stuck in Too Many Kids as a placeholder. Like, don't worry about it. And they kept it. I have influence.
That's awesome.
And they changed the Stan Lee Jack Kirby title to Childlike Wonder. So I'm like, yes, it's no accident.
I always thought those were funny. I like seeing their names on the book too. Actually, it's cool that you guys have been doing that now, and it's with good reason, of course.
Yeah, I just like that it reminds me every time that I'm working on a Stan and Jack book. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's gotta be a thrill just to work on those characters because of what they mean to at least to Marvel in general.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's a pop culture.
Yeah, definitely.
Everyone knows who the Fantastic Four is.
Yep. Despite the movies, which I'm not going to get into.
Anyway.
Yeah. And back to the questions. Our next question is from Eric Williams, and he's I want to know how one learns the process of digital lettering and the do's and don'ts from a writer.
From a writer?
Yeah. Well, we kind of went into some of the process stuff for the digital lettering, but as far as the writer, if you're talking to a writer, what are the do's and don'ts that you would tell them?
Oh,
I think
I don't know. That's not really my place. I'm just a letterer. The only thing I can really say, and this is boring as hell, is if you're working with another letterer and you're going to send them the script, send them an RTF or a doc file instead of a PDF because they're way easier to copy and paste from.
Okay.
Yeah, boring.
That makes total sense, though.
Yeah, it's a technical thing, and it comes up a lot amongst us letterers, and I see other letterers tweet about it all the time. It's like, don't send us goddamn PDFs.
Yeah, I see that. I mean, that was
like every 2 months or so that pops up. It's like, oh, this book must be going. I don't know.
Our next question is from editor Alejandro Arbona, and he asks, what's the name of the bratwurst advertised by Rainier Wolfcastle?
Oh, man. Alejandro. We have this weird game that he and I play, and Declan Shelby and Jordy Belair join in on it, and I think Ryan Stegman does too, where one of us will name a Simpsons quote, and somebody else has to dive in there and complete it, or say something else from that episode. Ugh. But, let's see, I can do this. Let's see. Okay, the name of the bratwurst advertised by Rainier Wolfcastle is in song. And it goes, my bratwurst has a first name, it's F-R-I-T-Z. My bratwurst has a second name, it's S-C-H-N-A-C-K-E-N-P-F-E-F-F-E-R-H-A-U-S-E-N.
Wow, I'm impressed. Very impressed, sir.
I'll be here all week.
Speaking of Declan Shelby, he has a question also. He asks, who is your favorite letter, and who do you think is really who do you think is doing really good work these days?
Okay. Well, my favorite, of course, is Chris Eliopoulos.
I knew it was coming.
I have a lot of favorite letterers, actually. Like, in addition to Chris, I really like Tom Marzuchowski. And there are a lot of letterers that I like from different periods, like, just because. Like they'll do just different things I did throughout their career that I thought were really cool. Like, Pat Brousseau, when he did Hellboy, I thought that was awesome. Like, you remember those from way back in the day when he was hand-lettering each issue of Hellboy? It just blended in so perfectly. I think that's some of the best stuff ever made.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, there's a lot. I really like, I like Joe Rosen a lot, who I think passed away recently. Very sad. But
did he letter Sleeper? Or I'm trying to remember what he lettered. But, yeah, his name is very
familiar. I'm thinking of, like, his classic work, like, the Frank Miller and Ann Nocenti Daredevil books. Oh. And, like, and Louise Simonson's X-Factor and other stuff like that. I started collecting those recently. I started picking up the back issues and now that I'm a letterer, the first thing I notice on every single page is the lettering. That's all that I see. So, like, even when it's good, I can still see it and I can see how it's good, but it totally takes me out of the story. And, like, now my criteria for judging whether a book is good is whether I notice the lettering or not. So Uncanny X-Force, I don't notice the lettering because the book is that good. But, like, the Joe Rosen books I would look at and I wouldn't notice it as much. And I noticed that. It's like, oh, that guy was really good. He was an excellent letterer, terrific draftsman, good at his job.
Yeah, he.
I like. Oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say I remember the name. Why it's so familiar? He did G.I. Joe for a long time, I believe.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he did it for. He did everything for a while.
Ah, man.
That was a workhorse. But I really like. I also like Todd Klein on Sandman and stuff. I really liked Andy Parkhouse on the old Captain Britain comics from the 80s. That was a huge influence on my work, actually. Just the way she would, like, lay down balloons but also do tails. Because she had a really specific finesse with the way that she did those. That they would be graceful and fit in with the balloons, but they would also still conform really well to the composition throughout the rest of the page. It would bend with the curves near it, but not to the point that it became a tangent. It was just really elegant and cool, and I try to incorporate that into my own stuff.
Awesome.
And, who I think is doing really good work these days, besides Chris Eliopoulos, of course. And the VC guys are all doing fantastic work. I love them as people. I love them as letterers. They can do no wrong. But I really love Dustin Harbin's work on Casanova. His hand lettering on that book, just, it can't be beat. It's great. It blends in perfectly. The guy's a wizard.
Fantastic. Actually, we kind of alluded to hand lettering before. Like, have you ever... played around with, you know, possibly doing some hand lettering yourself, or?
Well, I took a class on it my first year at Kubert School. I took an entire year of it. Mm-hmm. And I haven't really consider doing it professionally. Actually, Archie Comics offered me a job coming into their studio and being a hand letterer for them, but I decided to stay with Marvel. But that's the extent of it. I'll do hand lettering on my own stuff from time to time just for fun. And just because I'm sort of ashamed that I don't know hand lettering as well as I do, because that's like that's where digital lettering came from. It came from like knowing how to hand letter and just basing it all off of that. And I sort of feel like a phony sometimes. It's like, yeah, I'm a digital letterer. I'm pretty good at it, I think. But I probably can't hand letter for beans, and like I can't make my own fonts or anything.
Well, you know,
but it's something I've always entertained, and it's something I'd really like to learn. I think I'm going to buy a Cintiq soon, partly so I can just learn how to hand letter on a digital screen, like I think Dustin Harbin does, and I know Chris Eliopoulos did that on Cowboy, and it looks terrific. So,
yeah,
it's something I'd love to learn. Yeah, or learn more of.
I'm looking forward to that Cowboy book, by the way. It looks like a lot of fun.
You're gonna love it, man.
I've seen some of the art, and it looks like so much fun. Yeah, we need, mm-hmm. That's the type of thing we need more of, honestly.
Yeah. Well, I did flats on that book for coloring, for Chris Eliopoulos. Man, I've been saying that a lot. And it's exactly as good as you think it's going to be. And I saw most of it without the lettering on it. And I knew exactly what was going on the whole time. Chris is a really good storyteller.
Yeah.
Like I really underestimated him. But like I could feel like the heart and emotion of every single panel, and not without fully knowing what's going on, but totally understanding it. So yeah, y'all are in for a treat. Pick it up. Read it for free and then buy the hardback.
I look forward to it, man. I loved Misery Loves Sherman and his other, and
I miss Misery Loves Sherman.
Yeah, he does some fun stuff. I have such a huge respect for that guy, and because he's able to do all this stuff at the same. He letters a lot of books, and he somehow finds the time to illustrate his own, which is amazing to me.
And be a parent. That guy doesn't sleep much.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
Yeah, I'll come online at midnight because I can't sleep or whatever, and I'll see his. Is the little green light next to his name, and I'm going, oh, what is he still doing awake? Crazy person.
Now, the next question comes from Matt O'Keefe, and it's a fairly long question. So, he says, I know it takes a lifetime to master, but is lettering something that many people can learn to do proficiently? I'm not really tech savvy, but I make a lot of comics, and I'm wondering if I should take an introductory course to save some money on lettering costs. I don't want to invest in it if I'll only be able to achieve subpar.
Well, I disagree with the notion that it takes a lifetime to master. If you're starting from scratch and you don't have an artistic or design background, sure, maybe. But if he's already making his own comics and writing, I'm assuming he has a leg up on that to some degree. But what he could always do is just study the greats and try to do what they do. I think, like I said before, just really get into it, really study what people are doing and why they're doing it. But I think Comics Experience does have a lettering and production course, which is taught by Dave Sharp, who is a good letterer who you should definitely listen to when he talks. If it's like the coloring class, it's probably $500, but it's probably less than that. So if you really want to like be absolutely certain that you're going to be the best, or at least the very super good or better than average, sure, take a course, but I don't think you have to.
Excellent. Next question. The last couple of questions come from Declan Shelby once again.
Man, he's trolling me.
Well, okay, his question.
It's a good thing we're friends.
What was the name of the boat owned by McBain's partner, and what was his daughter's name?
What's with this McBain theme?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know the name of the daughter, but I'm pretty sure the name of the boat was Live Forever, and that was right before Scoey got shot.
And his next question, actually, this is a serious question.
Okay.
This is a cool way to kind of end the questions. Can you think of a particularly difficult lettering problem you've faced recently, and how did you overcome it?
Actually, today I got stumped for the very first time in like a year and a half, and I started to panic because I'm like, am I having a stroke? This never happens. And I actually haven't overcome it yet. I have to contact my editor and talk to them about this and say, okay, how are we going to overcome this? But more often than mostly it's an issue of like characters are laid out on a page in like the wrong speaking order. That's the one I come across a lot, and sometimes I'll get stumped on that. And usually the best thing to do is to just, I guess like with any other art form, is to just get up off your desk and take a 5-minute break or something. Go take a walk and clear your head, and then come and like walk around the block or take a shower or something, and then come back, and then maybe the solution will just pop right out at you. Because I had the wrong speaking order problem, and I went, oh crap, how am I going to compensate for this? But then I saw this huge empty space on the one side. I realized I could tail the, I could bend the tail. I almost said tail the bend. What the hell?
Must be getting late.
yeah, it's 10 o'clock over here on a Sunday. Oh, it's so late for a 24-year-old male. And yeah, I think I overcame it by just bending the tail around the other person who was speaking, and I still made it read okay. But yeah, just get away, take a break, come back with fresh eyes. Best way to solve any problem. Car, art, anything.
Excellent. And, of course, we've gotten, to, of course, to it's that time where, unfortunately, we have to end the this interview. For people who kind of want to follow up on you or look you up, but where can people find you online?
Well, I can be followed on Twitter at Clayton Cowles. That's Clayton and then C-O-W-L-E-S. And I can also be found on DeviantArt at mrclayton.deviantart.com. And that's the full spelling of Mr., no spaces.
Fantastic. And of course, I will link to these, to both on, you know, on the show notes.
Thank you.
And of course, you can support Clayton's work, you know, the titles that we mentioned earlier. But, you know, if you can only get one, be sure to pick up Journey into Mystery. and
632, definitely.
Yeah.
If you're going to buy only one book in the month of December, get Journey into Mystery 632.
Awesome. And, of course, you know, you let our other books, too, actually. You know, all of Jonathan Hickman's stuff, FF, Fantastic Four.
I don't Ultimate. Do S.H.I.E.L.D. That one's a top
No,
line,
Ultimate. You let all of them. But, yeah, Ultimates, FF, and Fantastic Four, you do them all. So
yes, I'm the Hickman guy.
You happen to do a lot of some of the best books out there. So, yeah, definitely look for his stuff. And of course, you know, you can find me online at my usual haunts. You can get me at about.me/PatLoika, or you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/PatLoika. If you are digging this show, I would appreciate some feedback. Send it to loikamania@gmail.com, or leave us a review on iTunes. It would be greatly appreciated. It kind of increases the visibility of the show, and, you know, it could help us get, you know, even more people on. And Clayton, once again, thank you so much for doing the show. And before I let you go, I have one final question for you.
Okay.
And this one may be, this could be very easy or very hard. We will see. question is, what is your favorite font?
Font? Futura.
Oh, wow. Just like Matt Fraction.
Oh, that's right, isn't it? Man, we're alike.
Fantastic.
Was he the one who said, like, if God would talk, Futura would be his font or something?
It may have been him. I wouldn't be surprised because
That sounds like a Fraction line.
I remember the first time I had him on because we were kind of talking about, you know, design and all that stuff in comics, and he was into, you know, typography and all that stuff. And he mentioned Futura was his favorite font. And for a little while there, that be, you know, whenever I had any guest who has some kind of background in design or, you know, or you know, any kind of, you know, lettering related stuff, we always end up with that question. You know, I forgot what John Hickman answered when we had him on, but we asked him that question too. So Futura seems to be a popular one among comics people. So I'll have to keep that in mind.
Yeah, well, it's a good font. It's versatile. It works in most places you use it, and it looks good.
Yeah, I think I think Matt Fraction, you know, the reason he picked it because I think it was on the Star Wars action figure boxes or something like that. I don't remember.
It's been awesome. Look that up. About that.
Yeah. But anyway, Clayton, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, man. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, man. You know, like I said, it was very interesting to hear your point of view of the creative process, and I'm hoping, you know, just I don't know how many people will listen to this show. I mean we get quite a few downloads, but
yeah, letterer.
I'm hoping more people be interested in what you guys do, and you know, and really, I hope you guys get more recognition for the stuff you do, because I think you guys have such an integral role in making comics, because comics, as I mentioned before, would just be a picture book without lettering. And there's so much involved. That's me. I mean, we spent almost an hour just talking about just the lettering and the process behind it. So it's clearly there's more to it than, you know, what people think. So I hope people learn a few things here. Maybe, you know, you get, you know, hopefully people hit you up and, you know, show some appreciation for the stuff you do, because you guys do good work. So again, thank you, and
thank you.
You know, hopefully we'll have you on again. I think, you know, I one of the things I've been toying with, actually, and this is something I don't think I've ever mentioned on the show before, I would love to actually assemble a full creative team on the book here and just get like some kind of commentary thing going.
That'd be fun.
It sounds like a lot of fun, but the logistics can be a bit of a pain. But, you know, one of these days it'd be fun to have, like, you know, a writer, artist, colorist, and letterer just kind of talk about, you know, the whole thing. And yeah, just see how you guys kind of interact and talk about a book. So
yeah, that'd be my first time talking to a lot of those people, probably. So
well, I hope
that'd be an interesting dynamic.
Yeah.
As we all get to know each other on a podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe one of these days. I mean, you know, I'm gonna work on setting something up like that eventually, and of course, I'll hit you up, of course, if that's the case. Well, again, thank you, and to everyone else, thank you all for listening. And of course, as I always say, you know, you should never ever be ashamed of liking the things you like, because you know, if you think it's great, it's good. So, you guys, take it easy, and we'll see you next week.
Discovered door leading to the gift of hope renewed, eternity for you. The masses of humanity have always had you suffer. Businessman whose master plan controls the world each day is blind to indications of a species slow decay. Can't you see that lives are just like yours? An unturned stone on undiscovered door leading to the gift of hope renewed. Eternity for you, the masses of humanity have always had to suffer. People blow their minds, they choose to resign. This deformed society is part of the design. It'll never go away, it's in the cause that way. The masses of humanity have always had to suffer.